like to use my mathematics to solve problems that I think are going to make a difference in the world.
Meet Kate Smith-Miles. Kate is a University of Melbourne Laureate Professor and an ASIMS Chief Investigator. Kate is also the Director of a newly created Australian Research Council Industrial Transformation Training Centre. It's called Optima, and its goal is to bring cutting-edge optimisation research to industry.
What I love about optimisation is that you take a step back from the practical problem, and when you express it mathematically, you can see the commonality between all these different problems. You develop new techniques that work in many different contexts.
In this episode, we explore the field of optimisation, some of the types of problems it's used for, and some of the challenges in trying to get organisations to buy into using it.
Until we can improve the way that an end user can feel that they understand what the optimization solution is and why it reached that decision and they can trust it, we're not going to see industry uptake.
We explore the goals of Kate's new Optima Centre, which is set to tackle some interesting industry challenges.
I think our industry partners at the moment are all pretty convinced that if they can crack the problem that they've posed to us, it will benefit their organisation.
Plus, a look at what else the centre hopes to accomplish.
We're trying to produce a new generation of researchers that can hit the workforce over the next 5 years and have the knowledge of advanced optimisation techniques to help industry make decisions more efficiently.
We believe this new Optima Centre will be part of ASIM's legacy, so we're proud to show it off in this episode of The Random Sample with our guest, Professor Kate Smith-Miles. Welcome to The Random Sample, a podcast by the Australian Research Council Centre of Excellence for Mathematical and Statistical Frontiers. I'm Emily DeWayne. In this show, we share stories about mathematics, statistics, and the people involved. You can learn more about what the Centre does by visiting our website, asems.org.au. That's acems.org.au. Our host for this episode is Dr. Savandi Kandanarachi, a lecturer at RMIT University in Melbourne and an ASIMS Associate Investigator.
Hello everyone. Today we're chatting to Laureate Professor Kate Smith-Miles from the University of Melbourne. Kate, we warmly welcome you again to the Random Sample.
It's my pleasure to be here, Savandi. I've enjoyed listening to all of your previous interviews. I think, as they say in talkback radio, long-time listener, first-time caller. So I'm really looking forward to the chat.
So, Kate, we'll be talking to you about your new centre, Optima, mostly about that, which is Optima is an ARC Industrial Transformation Training Centre in Optimisation Technologies, Integrated Methodologies and Applications. And So just to tie into the optimization, Kate, in December 2019, you were awarded the Renpotts Medal by the Australian Society for Operations Research. Now, this is old news, but optimization is one of the central themes of your research. So can we start with what is optimization and how did you get interested in it?
Sure. Well, I think optimization is something that everyone in high school has seen already, when you're trying to maximise or minimise some function, find the turning point of a function. I think anyone who's learnt high school calculus has been exposed to that idea. When I went to university to study mathematics, I realised there was a lot more to it than that, and that there were subjects I could take in optimisation in second and third year. So I took all those subjects. So that's how I got interested. I was really interested because of the obvious real-world applications of it. So I like to use my mathematics to solve problems that I think are going to make a difference in the world, and I saw optimization as a vehicle to do that. So optimization is really just about making decisions to achieve some kind of objectives or goals, where there are just too many choices to evaluate all the possibilities and too many rules to satisfy, even to try to find a feasible, acceptable solution, let alone the best solution. So you need mathematical techniques to help sort of prune back the search space so you can efficiently search through all the feasible solutions to try to find the best one. So examples of optimization problems, you know, if you're a retail organization, for instance, you might have a question like, well, how many items of a product should I stock to maximize my profit? And you know that for every sale, you're going to make a certain profit. So you'd think that the more you stock, the more profit you can make. But you also have to factor in storage and inventory costs. And what if the item was perishable and you can't actually sell all of them in time? And so it's not an obvious answer. There's an optimal answer for how many you should stock if you know your customer demand patterns and all your costs. And of course, it becomes much trickier if you're trying to manage all that uncertainty. But it's not just organizations that have optimization problems. We're affected by optimization every day in our lives. Like every time you use Google Maps to try to figure out how to get from A to B in the most efficient way, whether that's, you know, shortest travel time or to minimize your costs, whether you're trying to decide which stocks you should invest in a portfolio to maximize profit for a given risk level. You know, if you're unfortunate enough to be undergoing radiation for cancer, there's optimization algorithms that are helping determine how much radiation and at what angles they should be using to zap your tumor and not damage any surrounding healthy tissue. Optimization is just everywhere. So that's what I love about it. It's very practical.
Yeah, it does. I mean, all these applications that I never thought of. So in all the things that you've done in optimization, are there some optimization problems that you're especially proud of? Or that were more challenging than the others?
Oh, look, I think when I've solved a lot of optimization problems in my career, optimization problems, I'll say that there's two main types, and these are the two main types that we kind of focus on in Optima as well with our industry partners. Most of our industry partner problems fall into one of two types of optimization, and I'll call them model-based or model-free. So the model-based ones are where you can write down the mathematics. You know how your decisions affect the thing you care about that you're trying to maximize or minimize, how your decisions affect your goals. And you can write down the equations and you can use mathematical techniques to solve those. Model-free techniques, you don't have the luxury of knowledge of how your decisions affect your outcomes. All you have are past observations, some data that says when we made these decisions, this was how good it was. And when we made these decisions, this is what happened. And you have to try to learn to build a model where a model doesn't exist. So I've had past projects in the model-based one. I think one I'm particularly proud of was a PhD project, actually, that I supervised with an industry partner. My student, Stephen Edwards, worked with Leica Biosystems. They manufacture pathology testing machines. And so, you know, if you go to the doctor and they take a tissue sample and it goes off to pathology to test whether there's something wrong, the tissue sample goes on a slide and it goes into a machine. Well, inside that machine are lots of little robots that are doing their jobs to apply chemical reagents to your tissue sample so that the pathologist can read the result. And the little robots have to be scheduled. And so it's a fascinating optimization problem. There's so many rules about the job that the robots have to do, lots of constraints due to the chemistry, but they're also trying to maximize throughput, that we want to produce as many results as possible in a day. They want to minimize wastage of these expensive chemical reagents. They want to minimize their energy usage. And it's really difficult to model the problem. It doesn't look like any of the classic optimization problems. It was a difficult, real-world challenging problem. But Steve managed to solve the problem, but also achieve a really nice sort of breakthrough result in how he could improve the efficiency of solving problems like this through some symmetry breaking techniques. So I'm really proud of that project, because not only did we deliver a solution to the industry partner that led to them, you know, getting some intellectual property that they could patent, but there was a nice contribution to knowledge and improvement in optimization techniques more broadly because we got exposed to that problem. So that's the kind of work I like to do, where we're solving a practical problem, but it motivates us to develop and advance some new techniques. And then the model-free stuff, you know, years ago I got exposed to that challenge by an industry partner who was trying to design a new product. And it's the classic problem of we've got hundreds of decisions to make and we don't know how any of them relate to the thing we care about. And so we had to use their past data to try to, you know, fit some surrogate models and then optimize those. But interestingly, it's the same mathematical question when I talk to many other industry partners. It doesn't matter what product they're trying to design or process they're trying to optimize. It's the same mathematical challenge. So the techniques we've developed were useful for them designing a new product, but but have also now we're using those same techniques or expanding those techniques for working with Boeing on aircraft design, for instance, or with AGL for optimizing the way they run their wind farms. So there's, you know, what I love about optimization is that you take a step back from the practical problem, and when you express it mathematically, you can see the commonality between all these different problems. You develop new techniques that work in many different contexts.
Wow, super cool stuff. Yes. So you talked about the industry partners. That Optima has lots of industry partners, including Boeing and AGL. So how does that work? Do all these companies, you know, come to you saying that there is a problem? Do they even realize that it's an optimization problem that they have? I mean, how does it all work?
Yeah, so when we proposed Optima, so I should probably say something about Optima first. So it's an Australian Research Council-funded industrial transformation training centre. And Optima is an acronym. It stands for Optimization Technologies, Integrated Methodologies and Applications. And so we have a research agenda to drive advances in optimization techniques, but a real emphasis on industry-driven research, taking our lead from what we see the industry needs to be and making sure that we're advancing techniques that can help solve those problems. And we also have an agenda in terms of student training. So it's a training centre. We're trying to produce a new generation of researchers that can hit the workforce over the next 5 years and have the knowledge of advanced optimization techniques to help industry make decisions more efficiently, you know, cheaper, faster, better. So we've got funding from the Australian Research Council as well as Melbourne and Monash Universities and 10 industry partners, as well as, you know, some other funding sources like the Melbourne Energy Institute. And so our raison d'etre is really to be a single shop front where industry can come and say, we need some help with this optimization problem. Many times they don't know for sure if it's an optimization problem as we would define it. So I have conversations with them at first. They are trying to make decisions, right? So optimization is all about decision making. We need our industry partners to be wanting to find a better way of making their decisions. Many of them just have very fancy spreadsheets and they know they can do better than that. Or they just make decisions based on this is the way we've always done it, but they realise that they're missing some opportunities to make better decisions. Another important factor, so they have to have a decision problem that they're trying to do better. Another important factor is the decision has to be really important. In the organisation, if the decision, making a better decision doesn't have a huge impact on the organisation, they're not going to probably have buy-in. I have a lot of conversations with people, a certain person in an organisation, they get all excited about what we can do, but then they try and push it up the organisation to get support. To engage with us, and it turns out that the decision that they're facing is not that critical to the organisation, that it's not a strategic priority. So the conversation I have with them is pretty much along the lines of what's the decision you're trying to make, how do you measure the quality of that decision, what are the constraints that you have that make for a viable decision, and what do you already know, what data do you already have, what expertise or domain knowledge do you have that will guide us in whether this is a good decision or not? What can we learn from that process? And then I have to evaluate what kind of optimization problem is this? Is it, like I said, model-based or model-free? Can I write down the equations or do they just have data and I have to try to infer something? Is it an easy or a hard problem? Am I actually interested in working with them to solve this problem? Is it kind of fairly textbook and trivial, in which case it's not an ideal... I mean, Optima, our projects are for PhD students. A PhD student will be assigned to this industry partner problem, and so I have a responsibility to make sure that somebody can get a PhD by solving this problem. If it's a little bit too routine, then I'm just letting the student down. So we have to establish whether there's enough challenge there that we're actually really interested in the problem. And maybe it's not interesting in a research sense, and maybe it's more of a consulting project, in which case, okay, not suitable for a PhD topic, but maybe it's a good internship opportunity or some consulting work. So that's usually how the conversation progresses. If it gets to the point where I think it's a really interesting, challenging research problem that I think we can help, it's going to push us to develop some new techniques, then it sounds really good and it sounds like it's suitable for a PhD student to work on. And it's usually a pretty quick process for me to evaluate all of that, because they approach us because they know they have a problem and I can quickly figure out if it's mathematically interesting and if not, what other options are. It's usually a longer time frame for them once we agree that they have an interesting project and we want to help. That's usually where the delays then start, because it takes time for them to find the money to get the problem solved, and all the internal politics that they have to play higher up in the organisation to convince the powers that be that their problem is really worth investing in. And of course, sometimes that process is so long and there are so many delays with legal contracts and all that kind of stuff that by then the strategic priorities have changed and restructures happen, and you know, we've lost some industry partners due to the length of that kind of process, especially with COVID and priorities in organisations changing. But I'm pleased to say we still have a strong group of industry partners joining us in Optima, and a whole bunch more waiting in the wings to join once we formally commence in the next couple of weeks.
Wow. So in addition to the PhD projects, is Optima also going to do some consultancy-based projects to help industries?
Yeah, I think it's really important for us to see consulting as part of the training of this next generation of researchers. So we'd like to give them opportunities to develop consulting skills. I never like the idea of turning away somebody in need. So if industry approaches us and says they've got an optimization problem and I look at it and think it's a bit boring, we won't turn them away. We're just not going to call that a PhD project, right? We'll find some way. And so it might be that we have, you know, a little bit like the mathematics and industry study group situation. It might be that a problem is not interesting enough for a whole 3-year PhD project, but it could be a fantastic training opportunity for a group of young people with a mentor to sit around and brainstorm for a couple of days and come up with a solution. It could lead to somebody getting a job or an internship. So we'll be developing those kinds of opportunities as well.
In that sense, the Optima's involvement with industry partners, is that one of the main ways that Optima is different from a centre of excellence?
Definitely the involvement of industry distinguishes training centres from centres of excellence. We're like a centre of excellence in the sense that we're supposed to be doing excellent research. We have postdocs as well that we employ who will be doing independent research, and we have 18 chief investigators between Monash and Melbourne who are all, you know, doing research in optimization independent of industry problems. But the PhD topics in particular are driven by industry. Many of the research challenges that have arisen because of these industry problems, they cut across the industry partners. You know, these industry partners don't know each other. They work in completely different sectors. You know, we have companies in the energy sector and advanced manufacturing and, you know, Melbourne Water and, you know, infrastructure. But they have mathematically very similar problems sometimes. And the challenges, you know, some of the challenges like handling large-scale problems, the decomposition techniques, managing uncertainty, integrating sort of prediction with optimization, these challenges that we have to improve the techniques so that we can address those, their problems, are common to many of the problems. So it's not just about solving these industry problems. There's also stuff that cuts across all of them that the postdocs will be focused on. And our research programs really, the really interesting thing about Optima is that optimization means so many things to different people, depending on where you sit in a university. You could be a mathematician or an economist or a computer scientist or a mechanical engineer, and you all do optimization, but you use different techniques, and the techniques have been developed for different purposes, whether it's optimal control theory or Pareto optimality in game theory. And we don't talk to each other in the university. You know, we all work on optimization, but we don't talk to each other because we have different language that we use. And one of the things that Optima is trying to achieve is to integrate all the different disciplines that contribute to the field of optimization, and make sure this next generation speaks the language of all the different disciplines, that they get exposed to the ideas from different fields, and that that next generation is fluent in the whole set of techniques that comprise optimization. So apart from the challenge of integrating across the disciplines that comprise the field of optimization, Optima is also aiming to advance optimization techniques by being exposed to our industry partner challenges. But the final thing that we're trying to do is improve the uptake of optimization technology by industry. There are a lot of barriers to entry. We know how to solve optimization problems, but it's a little bit too challenging for an industry partner to know where to begin trying to solve an optimization problem. There's work we need to do in developing and advancing our optimization toolkit to make it easier to use and to address the issues of comprehension and trust. Until we can improve the way that an end user can feel that they understand what the optimization solution is and why it reached that decision and they can trust it, we're not going to see industry uptake optimization techniques as we would like to see. You know, human in the loop and all this kind of stuff is something that we need to integrate into our optimization toolkit.
So this improving the trust, it sounds that sounds like a real bigger challenge in a way. I mean, because you've got lots of experience in doing the research part of it, but how would you make a company adopt and take something long-term and say, we are going to go from this previous old way of doing it to this new way, which is mathematically sound and all that, but maybe only one person in that organization knows how to do it. And if that person leaves.
Yeah, it's a real challenge for sure. And you know, I think there's more we can do with our tools to make them explore the search space themselves, maybe visually, that they can see this is where we are at the moment, this is how we're doing it at the moment, and I can see that if we move over here, we're going to get a better solution. But that's going to be for the people who are using the tools and making the decisions. There's a big difference between knowing that you could be doing something better and working the organization and all the politics and other things to convince everyone that they should take the risk and do it. I've had my fair share of disappointments of industry projects that I've worked on where we have shown them that there's a much better way that they could be doing something using optimization techniques. And it's like, at the moment, you're doing it like this, and this is how much profit you're making, and you know, this is how many of your customers you're retaining, for instance. And if you did it a different way, the way we've demonstrated on your data, you could have made this much more profit and retained the same amount of customers, you know. And they say, that's great. We know that there's a better way we could be doing it. But there was such a long list of reasons why they couldn't implement the change that it can get a little bit frustrating. And it's nothing to do with the mathematics. It's sociocultural issues. And, you know, organizations are sometimes a bit reluctant to change the way they do things because of all the knock-on effects. But anyway, I think that's something that can be a source of frustration. But at the same time, it just shows how an interdisciplinary approach is really needed. We really do need to understand, you know, that mathematics is just a piece of the puzzle. And that many times, you know, it's one of the reasons that I also say to our industry partners that Optima is a gateway to the expertise in the university, because maybe sometimes you have a legal issue or an ethics issue or a social science issue, and we can integrate that in as needed. I think our industry partners at the moment are all pretty convinced that if they can crack the problem that they've posed to us, it will benefit their organisation, that they don't see obstacles to it actually changing the way they do things. But I think that's always a danger that we work for 3 years on a problem and then they don't implement it.
Yeah, but at the same time, if there's no one trying to push it to the industry, then it'll never get pushed. And yes. sometimes, often, if they see another competitor taking on this cool mathematical way, they'll be more kind of risk-taking and adopt maybe for a short time and then see, oh, it's got benefits.
Yeah.
Previously, you said in kind of like a single conversation, you can find out whether the problem that they have is interesting or whether there is a like associated problem which is interesting for research as well as all these other things. Would there be like, would it ever go beyond one conversation, maybe like several, to see the place and to see what they do, to understand and everything? Or because is it because like you've done a lot of industry projects by now that you're kind of, it's very easy for you to absorb what they say?
Yeah, I think deeply understanding the problem does require some time spent within the organisation. It's the reason that our PhD students are required to spend 12 months on site embedded within the organisation. At least that's the theory. With lockdowns, I'm not quite sure what will become possible. But for instance, wind farm optimisation, the student and I will have to go out to the wind farm just to see what it looks like. It's all very well to look at a picture of a wind farm. You know, our optimization problem is you've got this an array of turbines out in a field, and the front row tend to suck up most of the wind and convert that to energy and leave the ones behind a little bit idle. And so how do we optimize the whole wind farm operation? We want to maximize the amount of energy that can be produced by maybe making that front row a little bit less efficient, so that the ones behind get a bit more wind and they can work a bit harder. And so, at the moment I have a very vague understanding of what a turbine looks like and what the decisions are in terms of the blades that they have and the angles and stuff. I don't really understand until I go out there and see it for myself. So I'll probably go once. I think the student will spend a lot more time out there really trying to understand some of the engineering aspects as well. But in the end, we just have to say, well, what is the actual decision variable? What can you control here? Is it the angle? Is it the speed? Once we've got the maths written down, then, it's really just back at your desk trying to solve the problem.
So is the wind farm in Victoria or in Australia?
Yes, I believe it's in Victoria. Oh. I haven't been there yet. Yeah.
Very exciting, yes. So companies that are not currently the listed industry partners of Optima, say, they see your website and they think, oh, maybe we can approach them, or they hear from another person working, they hear from one of your industry partners that they're such a thing. Can they come and talk to you and give a problem? And
that's what we're here to do. We're here to support industry making critical decisions better, and we want to hear about their challenges and work with them to try to find solutions. It may be ideally at something that turns into a PhD project, but if not, there'll be other ways that we can work with them. And sometimes it's not an optimization problem at all, it's just a data problem. Or I've certainly had a lot of conversations with organizations that it may be an optimization problem eventually, but they're not even at that point yet because they're not even collecting the right kind of data. And, we can guide them in who they should be talking to about that. I've referred a number of industry partners to the APR intern program, for instance, where maybe you want an intern to work with you for 3 to 5 months in helping integrate your databases together or something like that, so that you can then have all your data in one place, and then we might be in a position to solve an optimization problem. Certainly it starts with a conversation.
So is Optima open now for a new industry person to come and knock on the door?
Well, we're just about open for business, although I've already been having conversations with new companies, and I do have a number of them waiting in the wings to join as soon as we commence operations. We have our initial group of industry partners who need to sign the legal agreement that's been sent to them yesterday, and so hopefully as we speak they are signing, and then as soon as we get all those documents back we are formally open for business. So I expect that by about mid-September, and in those legal agreements it talks about the process for admitting new industry partners, and so the ones that are waiting in the wings will be I'll be contacting them once we're open for business to invite them to join at that point. We've already appointed most of the postdoc positions and most of the PhD students as well, but no one can commence, no one can be paid until all the legal agreements have been signed.
Kate, are all the industry partners Australian or do they have international subsidiaries or branches or anything like that?
They all have a presence in Australia. Some of them are subsidiaries of overseas organisations, which is something that we'll be exploring over the years as well. You know, we're starting with local problems, but we hope that it might be a gateway to looking at some of the problems that are arising in those organisations more globally.
With the industry projects, are you thinking that most of the PhD students who'll be doing this will be out in the industry as opposed to going in an academic direction later on?
Yeah, I mean, we've committed to the government that over the 5 years, we're producing about 120 young people to hit the workforce to help achieve industrial transformation with their fantastic skills in optimization, but also their knowledge of business imperatives and commercial outcomes. So we are expecting most of them to have a destination in industry. But, you know, at the same time, they're going to be doing highly innovative research and they will have a choice at the end of it, of course, whether they pursue an academic pathway or industry. But I know industry needs them and the volume of people we're trying to produce is really to address an industry need.
Would you think that the companies whose problem that they were working on, they would employ them as well?
I think it's a really good opportunity for the industry partner to get a good look at somebody over a 3-year period where they're really like an intern. I mean, they're supposed to spend 12 months of their candidature embedded within the organisation. So they'll get to know them really well. And I would like to think that they'll prove their worth during that time and that the organisation won't want to let them go. It's been a really good opportunity for them to see what this person can do for their organisation. And, you know, I think it really just depends whether or not the organisation views their optimisation needs as ongoing or whether it was a once-off solution.
With the research outputs, in addition to papers, would you be thinking of patents or any other reports, government reports, that kind of stuff as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think in addition to publications, I think we expect to have a swag of patents over the 5 years that we've contributed to, whether they're in our name or the industry partner's name, it doesn't really matter. But our ideas will have led to some patenting of commercial outcomes, I hope. Certainly our industry partners are expecting to commercialise the project IP. We have legal agreements that ensure they can do that within their field of application. But we've also maintained our right to work with other companies who are not their competitors in other fields. So, for instance, I mentioned the pathology testing before. You know, the legal agreement we had with them meant that we don't have the ability to take any of those ideas and work with a competitor. But we were improving scheduling algorithms, and so we could work with a bus company in how they schedule, you know, the bus routes. So that's really important for us as academics to hold on to that intellectual property to develop in other areas. But, you know, we acknowledge that our industry partners are always going to want to patent and commercialise outcomes directly applicable to them. But, yeah, it's also important for us to have the traditional outputs as well, because our aim is to contribute to knowledge more broadly, as well as, you know, in addition to providing a solution for one industry partner, we want to have those longer term benefits as well. So, the industry problem is just, for us, just mere motivation for the sort of more fundamental challenges that we want to address in the field of optimization to address you know, things that will help with broader impact. So we're really seeking that win-win. Industry gets their answer. We get the motivation and impetus to advance optimization techniques. And hopefully there'll be research outputs in both, in the traditional publications as well as the commercialization patent space.
Sounds super interesting, Kate. Kate, I know that you've got a long history of working with the industry, but there are some mathematicians and researchers who are kind of thinking, what we are doing, can we work with the industry? So they've got question marks. So can you just give like a little story? How do you start off with an industry partner? I mean, without Optima, say, like, you know, when you were a long time ago, how do you start off and develop a relationship so that something good comes out?
Mm. It's a really interesting question. I mean, I've always been an applied mathematician, but that doesn't mean that the techniques I know are what are required, right? And so I think one of the, you know, I like to think of it as we all have our toolkit. We all have our hammer that we've developed that can hit nails. And sometimes when we want to have an impact in the world, we go around looking for nails that we can hit with the hammer we've developed. And sometimes we can get frustrated that there are no nails out there. No one wants my hammer to hit their nail. They don't actually have a nail. They have a screw and I should have a screwdriver, you know? So sometimes we have to have the confidence in ourselves that we can learn new things. And it's not a question of trying to flog a dead horse in saying, but I've developed this technique and why doesn't anyone want to use it? Sometimes you're lucky and someone does, but other times you need to maybe listen to the industry problem and say, you know, my hammer's not the right tool for this problem. But I've got good training. I've learned how to think. I've learned how to pick up a book and read and teach myself new techniques. And even though I didn't study a particular subject as an undergraduate, it doesn't mean I can't get that undergraduate level mathematics knowledge and use that as a launching point for a whole set of research articles that I could then read in a slightly adjacent field. And so that's the experience I've had where what I do now, the breadth of what I do has come from not being afraid many years ago of taking a step sideways to learn some new techniques that weren't my initial expertise. And it was actually industry problems that drove that process. I wouldn't have done it otherwise, but an industry partner had a problem that I didn't know how to solve. And the techniques I was an expert in weren't applicable. But I started digging around and being a researcher and researching how one solves this problem. And I realized that there are some techniques, but there's something wrong with them. And I've got an opportunity to improve them from my different perspective. You know, I've come to this field new. I can look objectively at what they've been doing for the last 10 years in this field. And I can say, I would approach it slightly differently. And then you get some ideas for some new technique development as well. But you've also got some new methods that are now applicable to this particular problem. And so all of this model-free optimization stuff, that was something that I've added to my toolkit because I got involved in supervising an AMSI intern. And I didn't know anything about the problem. I didn't know how to solve the problem. But with the intern, we worked together on trying to establish the set of techniques that are applicable to solve this problem. You know, how do I solve an optimization problem when I can't write down the maths? And I can't write down what the objective function is. I didn't know how to solve that. But I got exposed to this idea of this technique called kriging, or you know, statisticians call them emulators or black box optimization. And you read a few papers and you think, okay, I understand how they do it. We can do it. We can apply it to the industry problem. And then you realize the industry problem is not like the textbook problem. There's all these variations that make it more complicated. We need to advance the techniques. And then before you know it, 10 years later, you're now an expert in that as well. And so I'm really grateful to those opportunities to solve some industry problems that at first my hammer was not at all suitable for hitting, but it forced me to broaden my toolkit.
That's wonderful, Kate. So as a result of these industry collaborations, the toolkit definitely broadens. Can you tell the story of how Optima started? Like, how do you apply for it, and how did it all start?
Yeah, well, it's interesting actually, because you know, I'm part of ASEMS, chief investigator in ASEMS, and with ASEMS due to wind up, everyone was suggesting we need to put in a new bid to extend ASEMS for another period, and you know, we really thought that decision-making was really something we needed to focus on for the rebid. And so I was asked to lead the rebid, and a number of the ASEMS CIs were part of that, and some extra people as well. We put in an expression of interest for a centre of excellence, and we were knocked back at the expression of interest stage. The focus was very much about optimization and decision-making. And interestingly, there was another group who put in an optimization centre of excellence proposal coming out of Monash. Peter Stuckey and team there put in an expression of interest. And we should have worked together. I know we should have worked together. It must have looked ridiculous at the ARC to see two proposals, both coming out of the City of Melbourne, both in optimisation, not working together. I can fully understand why they rejected both of us. And so I looked at that and thought, well, that was a bit ridiculous. I know we should be working together. And then I saw the call for expressions of interest in ARC training centres, and I thought, actually, that's more perfect. We should work together, Monash and Melbourne, and combine our expertise in optimization, because what we really need to be doing is, yes, we need to be advancing the research, but we also need to be taking the opportunity to train the next generation. And you know, the reason we had two Centre of Excellence expressions of interest was because we live in two different silos. We had a mathematics perspective and a computer science perspective, and Optima is bridging that and acknowledging that and moving forward. So I like to think of Optima as a legacy of ASEMS. It came from an attempt to extend ASEMS towards optimization, but I think we've extended it in a much better direction. It's not just more of the same. We certainly have, I think there are five ASEMS chief investigators who are also in Optima, including our director, Peter Taylor, and others. But we've augmented the group to include not just mathematical perspectives on optimization, but engineering and economics and computer science perspectives, and I think we'll be better for it.
Kate, that's fantastic. I know you've been really kind of against this, having these silos, and you'd like to bridge them together to ask the important questions. So do you think in the future there'll be more kind of more bridging, or like, you know, this silo structure would remain, or... You know, what do you see?
Well, I think there's constant encouragement for us to become more interdisciplinary in our work. And I think the grand challenges of our time, we all know that they require interdisciplinary approaches. Just yesterday I was listening to the latest podcast that was talking about the Safe Blues thing that Peter Taylor and others have been involved in. And Peter was talking about the interdisciplinary nature of that project and how he's never been involved in such an interdisciplinary large team. But he's absolutely right that the pressing problems of our time require that. And, you know, the challenges that we are trying to overcome in Optima of learning to speak the language of the other discipline, it's amplified even further as soon as you leave the field of optimization and start talking about the social sciences and ethics and these other considerations, human psychology. You know, decision making isn't just about the mathematically correct answer. You know, there's a lot of psychology involved in whether people will actually accept a different decision. So, I think there are some challenges to working interdisciplinary, but we need to definitely progress in that direction.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk to us about Optima. It's really wonderful to talk to you. And, we wish Optima and you all the best of luck, and I'm sure it will be great.
Thanks very much, Sabandi.
If you'd like more information about Optima, just head to optima.org.au. That's optima.org.au. We also have additional information on our episode webpage. Go to asems.org.au/podcast and click on episode 60. Thank you for listening to The Random Sample, a podcast brought to you by the Australian Research Council Centre of Excellence for Mathematical and Statistical Frontiers. If you like what you heard, please rate us on iTunes, because we think stories about maths and stats are worth sharing, and we want others to discover that as well. You can learn more about what we do at acems.org.au. That's acems.org.au. And you can find us on social media by searching at Ace Math Stats. That's at ACE Math Stats. We'll see you next week with another story from within ACEMS. Bye for now.